one yeah. of the platforms.
He used to go out with his daddy working on the boats, and they used to go some of these platforms out. I couldn't tell you the name of the places, you know, but they used to go and, well, you just go and bring your shrimp straight to the platform, and it'd ball them right there, you know.
Yes, yes. And if you remember those stories?
Well, if I try to tell them to you, I might not be saying it right, because I didn't go. I just remember him talking about it. I don't know the name of the places. He can tell you where they were mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But I know he talked about it. Well, but my daddy was a shrimper too. But we, like I told you, we do the dry shrimp at the house. You ball shrimp for your supper. You got leftovers. You put them on a sheet of tin out in the yard, and you beat them in a sack and eat them. You know.
Well, that's what we need to hear from you. It's what you experienced yourself while you were growing up. Because, like I said, all that knowledge, when you're gone, that knowledge is gone too. So hopefully when he's going to be doing a school project down the road and want some of this information, he'll be able to get it from
that's
us.
That's not a whole lot of people wanting to get into it these days. Because it is a lot of work.
Right.
And the worst part of it is you have to know. Like, my husband learned it on his own. Like, if you don't dry your shrimp enough or you dry them too much, one way or the other, it's a mess because, you know, you're either making money or losing money, you know? Or if they're not dry enough, you can lose a lot because if they get sent back because they're not dry enough, they'll spoil. They have to be dried up to a certain point, you know, to be a good product.
Well, before we get started, I just want to get on tape that it's okay for us to interview you here. So just, as I said, it's just going to be made available to researchers for people who want to study mm-hmm. this down the road. So
okay.
It's okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. And your full name is?
Sandra Ann Mathurin Bouquet.
Okay. Thanks. Well, tell us a little bit. You said you grew up in a family and your dad was
a shrimper in. As a kid, I remember us balling shrimp, having crab balls and shrimp ball. We dried the leftovers out in the yard and beat them in a little sack to eat them as a snack, you know, and wasn't until after we was married. And my husband was a shrimper, and his dad was also a shrimper and oyster fisherman and all that. And it was a few years after we were married, we decided to just try it out, try a business with it. We made us a small platform and beat them by hand just to get the feel of it. And I'll say about 25 years ago is when we built the shrimp drying shed across the road with the dryers. And we also did have a platform behind the building at one time until the health department says that's a no-no, you can't do it anymore.
About when did that happen? When did you have to give up the platform because of the Board of Health?
I'm not really sure. I know we had the platform for a few years after we built the shed, but you know, it eventually just deteriorated with the weather and stuff. But we had it mostly like a backup space, you know. We spread them out on the platform when the dryers were full, and when we get a batch beaded, they'd bring them into the dryers to try to get them done faster. Now we just a matter of boiling what the dryers can handle and keeping the rest of them refrigerated in the trucks until the dryers are empty, because they won't let you put them on a platform anymore, which it never killed anybody. But that's just.
How big was the platform that you all built that?
Oh, it wasn't that big. It was just along the backside of the balling shed. I'd probably lie to you if I try to tell you. It was, I don't know, maybe 40 by 20 or something. I'm not sure.
Now, I know a lot of the old ones, they weren't flat. They had.
They made mounds in them.
Right.
Yeah, and you'd bunch them up at the peak part at nighttime and cover them with the tarps, and that way, whatever moisture was in it, if the water hit it or whatever, it drained down to the middle. I'm assuming that's why they did it. Because when we started our little one over here, we had to pick them up at night and cover them up. And it was just something us, mostly me and the kids. My husband would go shrimping, and at nighttime, he'd come in, we'd run pick them up and crank that with a old borrowed hand crank beater. That's an exercise anyway.
So the beaters that you were using, you had to turn yourself?
Turn it by hand. It was just a barrel thing with screen and with a crank on the end, and just me and the kids would take, I'll turn cranking on it.
And how long would it take, though?
Oh, I don't remember. It was, you just have to watch all the shells are knocked off. It probably took us a while because we weren't going very fast.
Do you have a picture of that hand eater?
No, I wish I would.
We do too.
I know. That's something I don't ever remember taking the pictures of, is that part of it. I didn't really have a good camera that day anyway, so.
When did you first get involved in the shrimp drying business? About 25 years ago?
So it's about 25 years ago because she's 22 years old and I was pregnant with her when we were building the building across. So we kind of like maybe started with a little thing, I want to say 23, 24 years, something like that. You know, but it's over 20 years that we've got the shed across the road that we do it. And bring them to Mr. Bloom, and we sold some to Mr. Roy Pico because he owned the property right here, and we'd sell him some and some to Bloom and Bashmore. Doing it for a while.
Would they come down and pick it up, or did you have to transport it?
Mr. Roy comes and, came. Mr. Bloom comes and pick it up, and right now we're also selling them to a guy in New Orleans, but we take them to him. He has a seafood place in New Orleans where they work them, pack them, distribute them, but he himself is actually in California. He just has different businesses. And
did he take over for Mr. Hoy?
Mr. Roy, yes.
Yeah.
Roy Pico.
Yeah.
He bought Mr. Roy Pico's business out, yeah, his accounts, bought his warehouse up the road, just took the equipment and brought it to his place in New Orleans, in Harahan, so I say.
What's his name? Is it a Chinese fellow?
Yes, Albert Lin, Gulf Food Products.
Yes, that's a name we found once before.
Yeah, he's a nice man. They'd use a good bit of our, right now it's just him and Boone, that's the only people we sell our dry shrimp to. When one has enough, the other takes over. When that one has enough, we'll go back to the other one. Sometimes they kind of like argue when the shrimp is scarce, they both want them, we kind of got to share them out. But they use a good bit of shrimp. And he's a very nice man.
Do you own your own boats, or do people bring you the shrimp?
No, we buy the shrimp from other boats. We don't. The only old boat we own now is a little outboard and an oyster boat. We don't go out and catch the shrimp ourselves anymore. He used to, but when he decided he was going to buy shrimp, he tried letting somebody run his boat for a while, just ended up selling it because when you got somebody running a boat for you, you can't always hit an honest person, and it was just too much hassle. So we just buy the shrimp from the other fishermen.
And you also have an oyster shucking business?
Yeah, just a small oyster shop. We don't shuck a whole lot, just basically for the people. A lot of people from around the area, people come from all over, now they know we have them because we just been doing it for a while and they like our oysters, but just this year it's just not working out. Oysters are not getting fat like they usually do, so we're just kind of holding off a little bit. But I know for Christmas they're gonna want them.
And oh, oyster dressing.
I know. They're still skinny right now. We don't like to mess with them while they're still skinny. We like to wait till they're fat because I don't like selling something to somebody that you're gonna put that in your mouth and it's just a little bag of water, you know? We like to wait for them to get a little fatter. That's why when they came up with this deal about the oysters for the summertime having to be processed and everything, that would have really helped us because it would have kept the oysters where they belong in the summertime, in the water, to be good for the wintertime. Fishing them year-round, to us, doesn't make any sense because they're not good in the summertime, they're just too skinny. But that's what the half-shell people want.
Okay.
They need them for their oyster bars. They don't, to me, it's not like a matter of quality to them. It's just a matter of demand. I guess an oyster is an oyster to them. You know?
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
You see, years and years ago, people used to fish oysters in the wintertime, shrimp in the summertime. The oysters would do what they had to do during the summer. When it was wintertime again, you had good oysters to fish. They would fish them year round. But now, in the department we have, we own oyster leases, but we work in shrimp. The ones that are fishing, you can't be out there watching your leases, so you know what's going on. You go out there in the wintertime, there's no oysters. But what you gonna do?
So the shrimp drying business started about 22 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. How about before that? Do you know of any of the early platforms and how they operated? Did you hear stories about how they operated?
I've heard stories. I know they had some out in the waters before they even had refrigeration and ice, that people would catch their shrimp, bring them straight to platforms out in different areas. I can't tell you the name of the areas because I might lie to you when I say the wrong place, but like my husband knows where they are.
Well, when you were little, there must have still been platforms operating out here.
I'm guessing there was, yes. I know there was, but I was not, how can I say it? When I was a child, I was just drying shrimp at home to eat. It wasn't a matter of the business, and it, to me, it was not something I was interested in, you know. So, I mean, I've read stories, I've seen pictures at Bloom's, which, you know, interest me, but I wasn't involved in it at that time. So I couldn't really tell you a whole lot of it, just from a few things I've heard, but I never experienced it.
Sure, that's fine. We just thought you might have heard people talk about it or remembered some of it.
Yeah, well, so I said, I remember my husband talking about them going out and bringing them to a platform, and I think he even helped them work on some of them, you know. And then, like at Mr. Bloom's place, I love this picture he had on the wall with the dry shrimp dance where they'd pile them up and dance to knock the shells off. You know, you just, when you stop and think about that time and how different it is from now, it's just hard to believe.
It is. And it was difficult at best.
Oh, yes. It was not an easy job.
No.
It's still not the easiest, but it's a little bit simpler. And whenever we get our new place, we're going to be rebuilding the drying shed. And hopefully it's going to be where it's a little bit simpler. He's got ideas to where to make it where we won't need as much of the labor, because that's hard to find. Once you send a couple of the guys in that shed across to try and dry some shrimp, you know, if it's a new guy that never done it, he's not around very long. So that's, you know, that's one thing with this, the labor. So the new mechanical things these days, and we're gonna try to make it a little simpler. We got our son-in-law right now, he balls for us, so we're teaching him one step at a time. He does the balling, and we have the crew that does, you know, washes the dryers and turn them every 2 hours. But my husband's the one that decides when to go in the beater, but he's kind of sort of letting our son-in-law judge it, you know, you tell me if you think they're ready, and then he'll check and see if he's right. Trying to get him to learn that part, so he's pretty much got that. But as far as when you put them in the beater and beat them until they're just, the shells are rough and you're not breaking up the shrimp, that's something my husband still has to be here to watch. He doesn't want to teach him everything at one time, because then you're going to forget. But he's hoping he's going to want to keep it going.
I understand the drying part is the most critical thing.
Yes.
It's got to be just right before you put them in the beater.
Yeah, and the health department requires you to take a certain amount of water out of the shrimp. You have to, they want it like them to be dehydrated up to a certain amount. You figure out what your weights and stuff, after, you know, before and after what you come out. But if you don't ball them enough, if you don't dry them enough, they're going to be too soft, and when you go to beat them, the shells won't knock off. And if you keep them that way, and you try to send them out to your customers and everything, and they stay damp, they're going to end up mildewing. So they have to be dry enough to where they'll stay good, you know. If a dry shrimp that's dried right, I mean, it'll last a long time. You don't even have to worry about refrigeration or anything. It'll just stay good because it's dry, it's cured. But if... we've never really had problems with our shrimp not being dry enough, because he's always done it. But now, if I've heard of other processes that they would do it, because the more weight you come out, they charge him about a pound. So they were more interested in the money than the product. Because years ago, Mr. Roy, when he was buying the shrimp, he would buy from another one. I'm not going to mention any names, but he would buy from another person that would also was in the dry shrimp business. And when they'd go to clean them and they weren't dry enough, he'd come and bring them to us to ask them to finish drying them. Because he couldn't send them to his customers like that until my husband just told him one day. He said, look, why don't you bring them back to him, let him finish drying, so he knows he's doing it wrong. And he wouldn't do that. I don't know why he kept bringing them back to us. He didn't want to, I guess he didn't want to bring his complaints to the other guy. I don't know what it was. But you have to have them dry enough. And if you make them too dry and you put them in the beater, they'll fall apart. But me personally, I like them dry because they're crunchy. But that's not the way to make money.
Now, how many of you are left that you know of?
Drying shrimp?
Yes.
We dry the shrimp, and Mr. Norris dries. High Seas dries. I think Al Marmon dries. Houston Foray, I think, is out of it. He hasn't done it in a few years. Al Marie used to do it. I don't know if he does anymore or not. I think he's out of it too, but I'm not positive. I haven't heard anything about him in a while. There used to be a guy in Grand Isle, but I think he got washed away for the storm.
So, roughly four operations here.
And there's another guy down here, Irvin Nockham, but he's like on a smaller scale. He drives them to put on the little cards in the store. I don't think he does any like really bulk stuff. He just, I think it's only his but he, the shrimp he catches, I think he processes them himself and just puts them on the cards. I've seen his shrimp in the store, but I don't know that he like does the whole amount and sell it to anybody like we do. We don't put them under cards, we just put them in sacks and they go to, they do what they want with them.
Yeah, I was in Chinatown in New York this year, and I was also in a Chinese grocery in California. Most sell Louisiana shrimp. So the market is...
Yes, well, the guy, like I said, the guy we sent him to in New Orleans, he's from California, and he does have some customers in California. In fact, he was telling us how, with the economy and things, how things are going down. He had a customer that would buy a few cases from him, and he'd tell me when he ships it, he's got a shipping charge no matter how much he ships. And his customer usually orders like 30 cases, but he said he only wanted 15 and maybe take another 15 after the New Year's and stuff. So he was going to find him a storage over there and just ship it all, because he said it would cost him twice the shipping. He's just going to find a storage to put it in until the other customer's ready. And it's in California. It's one of the stores, I believe. I think it's some of the Chinese people over there that they sell them in their stores. They repackage them and sell them. But it's, he said it dropped a lot, the sales.
Yeah, it's $22 a pound in California and just short of $29 a pound in New York City. And it clearly says Louisiana dried shrimp.
Right.
Now there's some from Thailand. No, Taiwan.
Taiwan.
So, but the price is pretty competitive, even those that are imported. I was curious.
Well, you see, saying that again, that Mr. Albert, we call him a Chinaman, mm-hmm. but he is from Taiwan. That's where he's from. Because every once in a while he goes, he tells us he's going back to Taiwan to visit his family. I think his mother was just in the hospital not long ago or something. But that's where he's from.
And his business is in Harahan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Commerce Point.
Okay.
But he doesn't stay there. He comes every so often, but he's got this other guy, David, that works for him that manages the place right here, cleans the shrimp,
okay.
You know, works the shrimp for them, packages them, and ships them out.
Well, we hope to talk to Robert Hoy. He was on St. Louis Street for a long time. He sold his business to Albert, according to Lewis. And we have this long connection of Chinese,
mm-hmm.
Which is not widely documented. Trying to find out as much as we can about, you know, the Chinese interests. They had their own platforms, two big ones.
Yes, well, Mr. Albert, I remember him telling us he had a a drying facility, I believe, in Taiwan or somewhere, or in China. I remember him telling us about it, and it was like set up different, and he would have wanted to us to try it the way it was, but my husband didn't go for it. It was a big operation. He had some kind of experiment, I think. Something that I think he could ball him and dry him like in one, you know, I don't know. He was explaining it to us one time, and it's just not the way we do it, so. But I think he must have been drawing some out where he's from. I don't know.
So Louis Bloom comes by and picks up your shrimp and the shrimp dust, the brand?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a market for both?
He has a market, yes. I mean, and it helps us because we don't have to find a way to dispose of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't. I mean, he pays us like twice a year. It's not a whole lot. I think $22 a ton he pays us for it, but at least, you know, he's getting it out of here.
Yes. Yes.
Because sometimes, you know, they fill up quite a few sacks with that shrimp dust.
And do you know what it's used for?
I don't know. I've heard like pet foods or fertilizer. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. We've heard both those.
And every so often we get some of these old farmers that'll come and ask us for a sack so they can put in their garden. So I guess it's good fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband tried spreading some one time on some property we have, and you know, you have to get over the smell if you put too much of it.
I guess
they know how to mix it because I don't think too much would grow in there.
What's happened to the industry since the storms, you know, the last few years?
Well, it didn't. Not that it's affected us anymore, really, any way besides the shrimp. You know, after a storm passes and the boats have the trouble going back out and clearing out the waters and get the junk out so they catch the shrimp. But it's, we wash our shed and sterilize it and order new heaters and we're back in business. We're always, you know, we're ready to go before the power gets back on. We just don't let it sit. You have to, like, people sit back and wait for FEMA, for somebody to come help them. We don't do that. We get over here, we get our crew, we clean up, you know, take pictures and then worry about the insurance after. We get ready to work. And that's what we did.
What about the number of shrimpers operating in here, like the people selling to you? Is that number going down since the hurricanes?
Over the years, the numbers have, I guess you can say, gone down. The, how can I say, it's kind of switched around from, used to have the old shrimpers, old trawlers, and people who used to chase sea bobs wintertime. That generation's either retired or died. Most of the shrimpers, like the ones who just wasn't really into it, I guess, and couldn't make ends meet, have gone on jobs. The majority of our shrimp is here right now, Vietnamese. It's just like it just did a complete turnaround. I think, I would say about 3/4 of our shrimpers are Vietnamese right now. And if it wouldn't be for them, we could probably shut the place down because it wouldn't be enough to keep going. There's a very few, maybe, right now I can think about maybe 3 or 4 of the Vietnamese that I would actually say I'd rather not have around here because they're lazy and they're just more of a pain than anything else. The others are hustlers. They work. And we have a few left of the good shrimp, the American shrimpers, you know, the ones that have been with us for years. But like from what the way when we started, it's just completely changed. We used to work, this time of the year, we'd be on the dock 24 hours a day sometime when they'd go after the sea bob. Now it's been years since we've even got a boat going after sea bob. In fact, we're thinking about trying to go look for some land around Cameron to try and get some sea bob where we can send our truck, you know, go a little over there and truck them back. Because like Bloom and them, they want sea bob in the wintertime, and we're not getting them. So it's just a whole different turnaround.
Now, do the Vietnamese live on the bayou?
Some do, some live in town. They leave their boats tied up here. Most of them all have their, either here or at our other place. Their boats are all tied up around here. There's not very many of them that'll have a place to bring their boat. But some of them even live in New Orleans that come around. Hmm. Like, they'll work, depending on where, I guess, the good spot is, they work this end. Sometimes they'll work towards the east, depending. You know, and in this area, they sell to us. When they go to the other end, they go to Leeville or Venice.
Mm-hmm. Venice?
They travel to wherever the shrimps, that's where they go.
When we were driving down, we saw a shrimp boat, and on the back of it was a big sign that said, live bait. What is that?
That's people that have a bait license. Like if the inshore waters are closed, they can still go out and catch shrimp to sell for bait, but they have regulations they have to follow. They can only keep the live shrimp, and they have to only, I think, leave their nets in the water a certain amount of time. It's for these little bait houses that sell to the people going fishing.
And like Marie's, isn't it Marie's up the bayou?
Martin's?
Martin's,
yeah.
Yes.
Martin's bait, they sell it in the bait house. And then down the bayou, well, the man just died, but he used to do it too. His son sells us his shrimp, but he had a bait license too, that Bayou Bait and Tackle, but the guy just recently died with cancer, so he's not around anymore. But the son's trying to get the place. But that's what those are for. They catch the live bait for people to go fishing with.
So now, would sportsmen buy that bait for their charter?
I really don't know. Okay. I don't know what they do.
Right. We saw the sign, and I'm going.
Yeah, well, they have a bait license. It's different. And they have to follow regulations, though. You know? They're allowed to go catch shrimp when the season's closed to sell for bait.
Okay.
They have to have the live boxes on their boat to keep them alive.
I want to get back to something we talked about when we first started. I'm from up around Opelousas, and
okay.
We used to eat dried shrimp here in Lent all the time, but it was always in stews, and I didn't even know you could eat them, you know, without cooking them. Until we started this project, did y'all eat them, I mean, in stews or gumbo or something here?
I've heard of dried shrimp gumbos. I tried one time, but that's too much fresh shrimp around to make a dry shrimp gumbo, for my opinion. I'll eat them out of the bag, and that's my problem, because over the years, you know, it's kind of like you get these health problems, you know, and it's like I'm on high blood pressure medication, and this dry shrimp has the salt, and I take a fluid pill. So when I have to sit down and clean some shrimp, because I clean some every once in a while, because people in the area want to sell it, you know, in bags, but I cannot sit and clean the shrimp and not eat any, and that puts me in trouble. But as far as cooking, lots of people come here. Some people tell me they cook them like smothered potatoes. You know, I don't cook with them because I'd rather the fresh ones when
I
cook.
Sure. Well, I understand that. It's just where I grew up. You know, it wasn't easy or to get them, and most people couldn't afford them anyway. So.
My husband's doctor, he sees it in auctions in New Orleans. I'm thinking he might be from, is it German? I don't know what it is. He's from another a foreign country. But whenever my husband goes for a checkup, he'll bring him some because he says he likes to take them. He soaks them, you know, get the shells off, and he makes them an omelet for breakfast in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll make shrimp omelet, but with leftover ball shrimp, not dry shrimp.
No, there's too many fresh shrimp.
Right.
I understand that.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, but a lot of people have come here, especially like we get people coming when the first cold front looking for oysters for a gumbo, or you got dry shrimp, I need to make a gumbo, you know? It's like, yeah, it's just everybody's different preferences, you know, how they were raised. But we started here with fish. You know, we used to buy fish. I mean, fish is what built this place. The bull drums, the redfish, and the garfish. Like we were talking about Opelousas, we used to go to Monroe every week, twice a week, deliver garfish to the markets of that. We had gill nets, and then we had boats. We had like 3 or 4 outboards at a time, and miles of gill net. Until they banned the redfish being a sport fish and banned the gill nets, you know. That was it for the fish and us, but it's fish that built this place.
Did you ever dry fish?
Only thing we did one time was when they had the gillnets out, and there's one of the Vietnamese somewhere, so one of the fins, they saved the shark fins, and you put them out and dry them, throw them in a sack, and bring them to them. That's as much as I did. But, you know, we get these Vietnamese that come in, and sometimes when they come in to unload that shrimp, you see them climb on top of that cabin and pick up that fish. But they make their soups with it, but not me.
Been good. Been good. Real good.
Appreciate your doing this for us.
No. Very, very good. Very good. But before we turn this off, explain to me again your heaters. You said it's like a home?
It's a central heater unit. It's just, we buy them from Granger. It's a central heat unit just like people put in their houses, but it's modified. It's got a blower to blow the air into the box where the dry is, where the shrimp are at.
So you have gas line going to each blower.
Each heater.
And then...
There's a blower on it.
I got it. Now I understand.
And the blower pushes the hot air into the dryer. We have 15 heaters in there. So you can imagine in the middle of the summertime when it's 90 degrees or so outside, and there's 15 heaters in that building.
Now, how often is it? Do you have to turn them?
Once they get them boiled, that's a hot part. They get them boiled and take them in wheelbarrows and put them right into the shed, dump them in the dryers. And then after the dryers, either they finish or after the dryers are full or whatever, whichever is first, every 2 hours they go and flip the shrimp over. And it takes about 6 to 8 hours to dry a batch of shrimp. On a regular, not an overloaded day, but on a regular day, they'll boil 400 pounds of shrimp to the batch, and in the boilers, they'll put 600 pounds per dryer on a regular day. But I don't know exactly how many dryers he puts in the beater at a time. I never did ask that. But we'll go up to as high as 800 pounds per dryer when there's a big load of shrimp. That he don't either have too many. If we have to save some already, that might be two batches, two rounds. Or if it's not enough to make another round, he'll just add extra to the dryers. It just takes him a little bit longer to dry. He doesn't like to do it, but sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
But you're right, it must be tough in there in the summer.
Oh, them guys will come out there, their shirts on their shoulders, wiping their face with it, and I don't see how they do it. I hardly ever go across the road because my job's on this side. I work the office, I work the dock, run the conveyors and stuff. But as far as going in there, I want to say in the 20 years we've been doing that, I might have gone 10 times in the building when they're doing the shrimp. And when you pull that tarp back on that door to walk in where the dryers are at, it's like, where's the air? And I don't see how they can do it. But
now, it's all local people that are helping you?
Well, my son-in-law works for us, and the other guys are Mexicans.
All right.
They're seasonal. They come here. In fact, they're going to be leaving to go back home probably around the 18th or 19th. So after that, we're just going to have to see what happens, because we try getting local people to work for us. You hire them. All they want to do is say they have a job and wait for a check. They don't want to work. And you get aggravated with them. These Mexicans and their workers. You tell them what to do. We've had very few we had to just send back, go back, we don't need you, because couldn't put up with them. They're lazy ones. But the majority of the ones we have this one that comes every year. They're coming for quite a few years now. He'll ball shrimp for us too, because he knows how to do it.
Now, does he live here?
We have this little camp here that they stay. When they're here, they live here.
Let's wait for this. So you have a place they can live?
Yes, we used to buy little campers and put right here behind the office where they would stay in. But it got to where we had to keep buying campers because they don't last. But we built this little camp up on Pollings right here that's the Mexican's house. We have I think, 5 or 6 bunks in there. And that's where they stay. They have the kitchen, the stove, the bathroom, wash and dry, everything's in there. So whichever ones are working for us at the time, they sleep in there. And until they're ready to go back home.
And they go back home just before Christmas.
Yeah, most of them do. Some of them, we've had some of them actually stay through. But most of them will go back home for Christmas because these, and they have the ones that work at High Seas, they're all the same people, and they have a house there that some stay in, and a few out of the docks. And whenever it's time that they decide they're going to go, they all go together. They probably have a caravan when they're leaving. Because they have a lot of Mexicans that work over there too, this, and that also is going to affect the closing of the shrimp season, because even though the season is closing on the 22nd, it usually closes itself like I think it's about to do, because these boats are going out and coming back with nothing. So it's probably just about finished with the inside, but the Mexicans are going to be leaving the 18th and 19th, so the factories are going to probably quit buying around the 15th, because they have to have all that shrimp worked and packed and in the freezer before that work is leaving. So after that, I'll probably be it. They'll be shutting it down.
Have you learned some Spanish?
No. Except for,
No. Si.
Amigo. I would want to, but I would have to, I don't know. I would like to have one of them just sit there and teach me a few words, because I understand the French. I don't talk it because it doesn't come out like I want it to. But even though I was raised, my grandma just talked French, you know, my husband talks French. Then I had to learn sign language, because I have 2 daughters that are deaf. So with the sign language, the English and the French, you know, I wouldn't want to learn the Spanish, but I wouldn't want one of them to sit and teach me the words the way they know it. Because I don't know if Spanish is like French, where you have the Cajun French and you have the France French, you know, that don't go. I want to know the way they talk. I don't want to learn from some book and it's not the way they talk. But every once in a while they'll say something, you know, like I know yellow means ice. That's one word I know. But besides that, it's just a si, senor, you know, we just joke around like that. You know, agua means water. Because when I'm coming to the office and he tell me agua, okay. But they know English, so as long as they know a little bit English, I'm not too worried about the Spanish.
Did any of your family trap?
Yes, well, my husband trapped in the wintertime before we were married, and after we were married, he did some trapping. My dad, I don't know that he trapped. He used to have, I remember, a little building in the back where he used to get the neutrals from the trappers. I guess he would buy them because they would skin them and we'd dry the fur.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that after I was married, and my husband trapped, his dad trapped in the wintertime, and for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see much of that anymore.
No.
It was at one time when we first moved in this house that there was enough space under it where he had a shed underneath the house that he would skin his neutrals and rats in, until that just, I guess the hurricanes then took over that, just gone, but he did that for a while.
Yeah, but you don't find many people at all anymore that trapped. At one time there were 20 or 30,000. Now it's hard to find.
Well, I know. I remember, that. Like, if you didn't have the right, let's say, a big old shed to do your skins, and you had, it's almost like the dry shrimp. You got to pick them up at night when you had the platform, yeah. And you had to have the skins picked up. And if you didn't have no place to put them to keep them out of the weather, you had to bring them in your house. Right now, if I try to tell me, you know, somebody talk about putting neutral skins on the molds in the house, stack them in the house, he'd probably look at me and knock me over the head or something. He's like, you ain't bringing that in the house, but we used to do it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I spent quite a few days with my daddy when I was a little girl, pulling staples off of the bottle of the molds to get the skins off, you know, because they'd use the staples to put the skins on. We'd have to go lay them out in the yard. He had all these little poles with the wood across where you lean them on, dry them out in the sun,
mm-hmm.
Pick them up at night.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
A lot of work.
You know, there was steps, you know, like we had people that would skin them, and that was this big old pole where you stretch the skin over it, and they'd use a scraper, a two-handled thing, I don't know what you call it, they scrape the fat off the skin. Then they would go to another person and put them on the mold. But then at the same time, he was doing something with the meat, which I really don't know what he would do with the meat, but some